background on my religion, my religious background. Brought up in a Baptist home, and a very devout one at that. I was very, very active in the Baptist church all through my teen years and early 20s. Then when I got out to work, earning a living, I got away from the church. Eventually started my own business, was quite successful. And coming into my 30s and 40s, I would have to say that by that time, I had become either agnostic or atheist. I had come to the conclusion that there's nothing more, and we had pretty well have good control. We didn't need any more. That was my thinking. So then, as we move along, about 27 years ago, actually, I was met with a series of adversities. And it was almost more than I could deal with at the time. That's when I came up with these questions. Is there a God? And if so, what is it? I seemed to have to know. I needed to know the answers to that. In order to continue on, or is it some purpose? So, I had always been a reader. I was brought up in a home where there were always books being read. So I decided that if I were to find the answers, I would have to start a serious reading program. I assumed there must be a lot of people who were much more knowledgeable than I, and they could help me finding the answers. Even though I knew the Bible, and I did know the Bible quite well, because of my years devoted to religion, I never even considered looking there for answers, because I wanted hard, evidence-based, matter-of-fact answers, and I knew the Bible, which is not written that way. I decided that science was the best source of truth, and I was going to become a seeker of truth. I borrowed a book from the library. That was called The Holographic Universe. Remember that, by Talbot. But it was the last book I ever bought, or ever borrowed, because I wanted to develop my own library, and so from there on, I bought books. I developed a little system for reading. I read with a pen. I make notes, marginal notes. I underline. And when I'm reading a book, if I have three lines, either in the margin or underneath line, underlined, that is gospel. That is, when I'm reviewing a book to give a talk, or I'm just going back to refresh my memory, those lines in the margin, whether it's one, two, or three, but especially if it's three lines, that's the point that the author was trying to make, and I have to remember that. So it's just a little system I developed. initially, I included some spiritual books of fiction, but decided the fiction would not provide the hard answers I was looking for, so my library is practically all nonfiction by authors who are either scientists or are well-versed in science and want to convey truth as it is found in science. So, in relating my reasons for arriving at conclusions, I'll tell you about some of the people whose writing influenced me. One of the first books was called Making Miracles by Paul Pearsall. Pearsall was dealing with his own adversity at the time. He had leukemia. He was dying. But his book was memorable. It was a good choice because it introduced me to elementary quantum physics. But more importantly, Pearsall talked about the power we have, or I should say, the power of which we are an innate part. He also wrote a book called The Heart's Code, which introduced me to the concept that our heart is fundamentally much more than simply a pump, as our medical system considers it to be. It's been said that the heart is the second brain, and in fact, the heart informs the brain more than the brain informs the heart. It's an amazing organ. The most important early readings were by Lynn McTaggart. In her first book, The Field, she interviewed scientists from across the world. For example, the German physicist Fritz Albert Pott explained how we are electromagnetic individuals. We give off photons, and our aura can be seen. More importantly, though, is our connection with the ubiquitous force field of electromagnetism that provides us with just one common factor in interpersonal communication. I read most of the books by M. Scott Peck. Remember his books, the Road books? The Road Less Traveled? And there are others. Peck was a proponent of the importance of community. He felt that we had essentially lost that in our quest for technology. I'm also a strong believer in the power of community and its importance in the paradigm shift we have entered. For centuries, we have only known hierarchical organizations: government, military, religious, education, etc. I believe that we must evolve to more of a networking social order, a more grassroots type of social order, where the individual is not so much in the control of the hierarchical structure, where cooperation rather than competition is prevalent. So that's just my thoughts on where we're going with this shift, this paradigm shift. Russell Targ was another author, one of a team of scientists who researched the phenomenon of remote viewing, our ability to see things remotely, whether across the street or across the world. Back during the Cold War, the CIA discovered that they were doing research in the USSR on remote viewing. And this wasn't even thought of or being considered with the American military. And so they set up a program to do their own research. They discovered that the Russian team had done their homework and found that there's an installation which was supposed to be a highly secret installation in the States. And the Russians had viewed this remotely. And so that provided the impetus for the CIA to set up their own program. This was called the Stanford Research Institute, the SRI. And Targ was one of the early members of that group that did the research on remote viewing. The other author is Greg Braden, from whom I learned about what he called the lost mode of prayer and the importance of feelings. One of the things that Braden, in his book, The Lost Mode of Prayer, he stressed the importance of emotions and feelings. In non-locality, which is a quantum process, we can affect healing at a distance. With our mind. And that's well researched. But one of the things that Braden made the point was that to have a thought is one thing, but it doesn't have great currency. When you add an emotion to that thought, you know, put your feelings into the thought, that then has currency in that non-local aspect where, you know, it travels and does its work. he also he had done his own research on an ancient group of people who lived at the time of Jesus, both before his death and after. They were called the Essenes. They lived in the in the temple. They were a very special sect of Jews. They had their own way of doing things. And I don't know what happened there, but they left the temple to form their own community. And they formed that in, name escapes me. Down on the Dead Sea, you know, along the shores of the Dead Sea. And they were the people who wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls. But what they left, the legacy they left that was so important, was how they prayed. I won't go too far into that right now, but their prayer is what we now call intention. And that, too, invokes that process that I'm talking about, the quantum process of non-locality, where we have the ability to change the structure of matter remotely. It can be across the street, somebody, or it can be the other side of the world. Another is Dr. Bruce Lipton, another author, a noted cellular biologist who wrote the bestseller The Biology of Belief. I should say that much of the science I gravitated to was bioscience, the branch of science that looks into our biology and neurobiology, and by extension, how we connect with the powerful force fields. We used to believe that the genes we're born with, determined much of our fate, and that they were unchangeable. What we know now is that while our DNA is indeed a blueprint for our biology, we do have the ability to make changes to that blueprint. We do have the ability to alter the expression of our genes. And that fact alone allows us to think outside the box. And that's where we have to get to. When we're considering questions like this, is there a God? If so, what is it? Outside the box. There are so many authors who are noted physicists who talked about the limitations of classical physics, the physics of Newton, which didn't tell us the whole story. Newtonian physics is the physics of matter, the predictable result of some kind of force acting on matter. Certainly it's been the most prevalent branch of physics because it enabled the Industrial Revolution and continues to amaze us in the post-industrial era. It becomes evident why Newtonian science and codified religion parted ways several hundred years ago, because religion dealt with heart, feelings, emotions, very subjective issues where science demanded that objectivity be observed. The philosophy of Descartes supported the then new science, and religion began taking back seat in Russian society. It appeared that science held the credible answers and religion was just a doctrine and lots of dogma. A few years ago, I concluded that following a scientific protocol and search for answers, finding the hard, irrefutable evidence that adhered to the scientific protocol of research would limit me in my findings. For example, subjects such as remote viewing, the ability to see remotely, presentiment, the ability to perceive happening before it happens, clairaudience, the ability to receive communications from those who have passed on. Having researched these phenomena, I was completely satisfied that these extraordinary abilities were possible, so I decided to venture into some of them in my quest. For example, more than 30 years ago, a physicist by the name of Roger Nelson began a research project at Princeton. He called it the Global Consciousness Project. He had a network of computerized sensors located in many countries. When a large or important event happened anywhere in the world, his instruments started reflecting or charting the results. On September 11, 2001, his devices were apparently reading the combined feelings of tens of thousands of people who were watching the attack on the World Trade Center. Even more amazingly, the instrument started recording, recording and printing off an hour to an hour and a half before the first event, before the first plane hit the first building. That one is amazing. This is, here we're talking about collective consciousness. And these instruments, he's still working these instruments. They're now under the auspices of the Institute of Noetic Sciences in California. other examples would have been O.J. Simpson, the trial. The world is waiting for that one to come down. And so it registered well. Also, the death of Princess Diana. And you have large events happening like that where so many people have an interest and their emotions are involved. These instruments somehow read that, read the effects of that in collective consciousness. And this may be one of the points that I should make here, that one of the things that changed fairly recently that has an effect on, well, what we believe, whether there's a God or not. It used to be believed that matter was fundamental in the universe. Fundamental. Now we know that consciousness is what is fundamental. Everything arises from consciousness. It manifests matter. So we have, in other words, an informed universe. There's an intelligence there. the Heart-Math Institute, a lab in California, had already been carrying out our research on collective consciousness and was now taking over the management of the Global Consciousness Project and has instruments around the globe to measure the effect of large happenings on our consciousness. The Institute has done leading-edge research on the heart as an intelligent organ. It informs the brain more than the brain informs the heart. Most significantly, in its research in consciousness, it has learned about our ability to become super coherent. We are coherent anyway, but at any given time, our state of coherence may be higher or lower. out of degrees. When we achieve a coherence of heart, brain, and body, we are momentarily in a higher state of consciousness. In these altered states, we appear to have a very close relationship with higher source. So, eventually I took a step away from heart science to learn about the concept of reincarnation. Ian Stevenson and his protege, Jim Tucker, both with the University of Virginia, carried out years of research on children who claim to have lived another life before being incarnated here. This is compelling data collected under scientific protocols. It is interesting that there are more reported cases of reincarnation in countries where the predominant religion believes in reincarnation. Not sure why that is. What the belief has to do with that. One of my most spiritually influential organizations is the Monroe Institute in Virginia. Their motto is, you are much more than your body. It was founded about 40 years ago by Robert Monroe, who was an expert in sound technology. They provide week-long as well as weekend programs that allow you to achieve an altered state of consciousness, such as near-death experience, or out-of-body experience, and many other programs. They leave you with a feeling that very much more is involved with Source. They developed a method of recording music for meditation that they call HemiSync. It is designed to help us achieve a lower state of vibration called Theta, wherein we may feel a transformative force. Recently, I read several books by Frank DeMarco. He was employed by the Monroe Institute. This was in Virginia. They now have one also in Vancouver. he transcribed their conversations. Talking about Frank DeMarco here. He's an author. He worked with Rita Warren, who also worked at the Institute. He worked with her for several years. She died in 2008. And a couple of years later, began communicating with Frank early every morning. He transcribed their conversations. And over the next few years, Frank had three books published. I'll call it Greatest World. Frank received questions from people who wondered what life was like in that non-3D realm. 3D, three-dimension. We're in a three-dimensional realm. That's non-3D. When we pass on, we're in the non-3D realm, or it might be referred to as all D. Anyway, he had published three books. He received, it is especially interesting in that she, being Rita, explains what it is like that we need to be doing in our 3D world to help those who have gone before and to help us in our multiple incarnations. Transition from our 3D world to her world of non-3D is one of essentially higher consciousness, not hampered by material body or the inability to decode the incredible intelligence that is available to us. What we call death is only a transformation from our 3D realm to a realm where, having dropped the body, we are no longer limited to only information we are able to decode. This may be the ultimate ascension to higher consciousness and arrival at enlightenment. In learning more about esoteric subjects, I looked into the concept of reincarnation. Ian Stevenson and his protege, Jim Tucker, both with the University of Virginia, carried out years of research on children who claim to have lived who have lived another life before being incarnated here again. This is compelling data under scientific protocols. It's interesting that there are more reported cases of reincarnation in countries where the predominant religion believes in reincarnation. So you can see that my search for truth was largely confined to the science of us, how we are affected by and can affect our environment. In other words, if I were to search for the presence of a supreme being, I would need to know how our connection was enabled. My primary assumption was that if there is a God, then we must be at least influenced by, or maybe even somehow connected with that being, that God. We're in constant communication with ubiquitous fields of energy, but we are capable of deciphering only a small part of that information. We filter out what our five senses do not understand. We can have a temporary glimpse of that higher consciousness if we allow ourselves to become more coherent. So my journey of learning included data from scientific exploration as well as compelling data from credible sources based on empirical data. One of my most noteworthy writers is Irvin Laszlo, a native of Hungary. Laszlo has written close to 100 books. He's founder of the Club of Budapest, a think tank whose members are notable futurists. Laszlo is a systems theorist, has been nominated for 3 Nobel Prizes, and writes profusely about the nature of consciousness, cosmological order, and spiritual intelligence. He calls this special field the Akasha, and he believes it is a repository for all information through all time and is accessible to us. His theory is that information from the field is coming to us all the time, but as humans, our limited senses are not capable of deciphering all of it. So much of it is filtered out. You can imagine that there's an intelligence in the cosmos that's going to be well beyond what we could comprehend in this realm that we're in. And so our bodies just cover it out. Our five senses are not capable of filtering all of that, decoding it. That is why it is difficult for us to comprehend the enormity of the power that we are an integral part of. Our social structure is not unlike an anthill. An anthill is very well organized colony. There's an intelligence operating there in the anthill. And you could liken us to that hill, say, in Central Park, where the ants are fine, they do the same, it's all very organized, intelligent within that concept. But there they are, they don't even realize what's beyond Central Park, what's beyond their anthill. And that's about where we are, in our level of consciousness. We can visualize. We can imagine, which maybe the ants can do, but that's quite as far as we can go. We can't really, at this level of consciousness that we share, at this stage of our evolution, we can't comprehend all of that intelligence. After many years of searching for credible data, I was compelled to form a conclusion that some form of greater intelligence, some source of information, some field or matrix of fields that inform the forces that we know and are an integral part of, all that we know, must exist. The fact that this is not already commonly accepted simply attests to the fact that we have still evolved to a higher level of consciousness. wherein we would not even question the proposition. So I finally arrived at a place where I could only imagine the complexities of the universe, the mind-boggling powers that we possess, and how exquisitely assembled our world, our solar system, and our universe really is. There's a fundamental force that provides direction to the evolutionary process. We used to believe that Darwin's theory of natural selection was considered to be a random process, but given what we know now, the best evidence says it cannot be a random process. There's indeed a purpose. So I am satisfied that there is an overarching mediating power that influences the forces that we know. So then the question becomes, what is it? We know less about the answer to that question, but there's now a determined drive by scientists to find the answers. The Big Bang resulted in energy and matter being distributed throughout the universe. The visible matter and energy constituted about 5%. Recent studies show that there must be more energy in the universe than first thought, and recent findings indicate that 27% is dark matter and the balance of 68% is dark energy. It's called dark energy not because we perceive it as bad or sinister, but rather because we know so little about it at this point. The answers we seek may lie in dark energy, or it may lie in still unknown field of energy, or even in a matrix of energies that provide an intelligence beyond anything we can comprehend at our present level of consciousness. Consider this. Down through the centuries, religions have been directing us to be more loving, caring, compassionate, forgiving, empathetic, and grateful. You'll agree that these attributes, more freely expressed, would have created a much different world than we currently know. Consider that if there is a God, then we must be in communication with it, since we believe we are an integral part of it. Being in communication is a two-way phenomenon. It is like a feedback loop, wherein the more we impart to it, the more we receive from it. Remember also that communication is energy. Energy is information, not just a carrier of information. Energy is information. And by participating in the exchange, we are reaching for a higher level of consciousness. Consider that there's a field of collective consciousness that we all contribute to and communicate with. Imagine the level at which that field functions, since it is a collective field, collective consciousness. It contains all the information that we ever generated. Consider that over time, we humans, endowed with free will, and believing as many do, that increasing our level of consciousness is our highest and best purpose, we will eventually rise to a level similar to that of Jesus. The term God is no longer a good one, because it carries many interpretations because of its use by other religions. So the term God means certain things to one person and other things to another person, depending on their religious teachings. A more appropriate term would be source, whether we're referring to God, Allah, Jehovah, Brahman, the Messiah, or whomever. It has also been referred to as the Akasha field, which Lazlo calls it, or the field of coherence, or the deep dimension, or the zero-point energy field. But in any case, it's a field that communicates and informs all other fields. We live in an informed universe, and we are like a transducer. We can send and receive. So in recent years, I've become more interested in reading about the larger picture, because we are all an integral part of that larger picture. This picture is the cosmological aspect of spirituality. It deals with bonds, implicate order. In our desire to have more things providing us with more comforts and less work, we have become fully involved with the workings of matter. We have regularly ignored our spiritual selves, our divine nature. We do have a need to feel our connection with our inner core, which after all is our real selves, our souls. That is the reality. The higher self that postures the innate connection we have with a source of all-encompassing power. Our purpose here is to, in some way, offer spiritual nourishment to others as well as to ourselves. In order to help those of us who have passed on so that they can more easily help us, you remember that feedback loop, we hope to foster a higher state of collective consciousness. A higher state of consciousness means that we deal with our fellow humans as well as all living things in a different manner, because that is what elevated consciousness is like. We feel more empathy, compassion, forgiveness, and gratitude. When we all more readily express those emotions, we will cause others to become more entrained with our feelings. They too will want to do the same. This is not meant for. Consider it that we may be functioning at a consciousness level of about 35%. I believe that we are actually functioning at a lower level of consciousness than our ancient forebears. We are driven by a need for power and control, and this quest has actually dumbed us down, separated us from our divinity. Consider that we have the ability to rise to a level of close to 100%, which is where Jesus was probably functioning. Think about what our world would look like if we were more fully conscious. I have a personal informal theory that I've arrived at. And this concludes my talk. I believe that we will eventually find that special field of power of which we are an innate part. I believe that when we finally discover that panel of energy, that is an overarching omniscient power that mediates all forces and provides direction and purpose to our divine presence, the name of that energy will be love. Please remember that when we express empathy, compassion, forgiveness, or gratitude, any one of them is an expression of love.